And we'll douse it. Will you help them with the lights when we get ready?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Jen Dyer. I'm the Executive Director of the Self-Help Center, and we thought we would come present to you today on SART, which is the Sexual Assault Response Team here in Ventura County. And I don't know if a lot of the communities are aware that we have a Sexual Assault Response Team, and so we just wanted to give you guys that information in light of all of the discussions the communities have been having regarding sexual assault. So today we have Cynthia Duncan here today. She's with Wyoming Medical Center, and she's the SANE coordinator. She's really the chair of the SART team, and she's the one that has been here through that whole process, so I'll kind of let her talk more. But I do have these packets, and I'm sorry they weren't sent out earlier. We had some confusion on how to get them to you, so I apologize. So I'll pass those around. I know there's two council folks, people, who aren't here, so I'll just leave their packet here.
Thank you.
So thank you again for having us here today. Like I said, I'll turn it over to Cynthia because she's really the one that has the information about the history of SART and the purpose behind it and the goals of our team.
Good evening. So you have several handouts in front of you. The first one is just like a bulletin point of what SART is, when we started. We've actually started in, it was October of 2010. We've been trying to get this up and going. It's met a few roadblocks, but I'm hopeful that we'll get there slow and steady. We'll get where we need to be. You have two PowerPoints. I'm actually going to do the second PowerPoint, which is why we need to start. The first PowerPoint is sexual assault, and I'd be glad to come back and give you that PowerPoint anytime you'd like to have it, but I kind of get on my soapbox with that one, and it's really detailed. So let's just do the second one, which is the Charlotte County Sexual Assault Team. Why do we need one?
Would
it
be
quicker?
Sure. Want, I can do that.
Then I
could
be some use.
Okay.
Okay.
Why do we need one? Because sexual assault happens here, right here in Natrona County, in the city of Casper, in the city of Mills, in the city of Evansville. It happens here. Why? Why do we need one? Because we care and we want to prevent it. These are some stats that we have. Now, these are sexual assault numbers from the emergency room only. I don't have correlation from other agencies. This is just what I've seen, the patients that have come to the emergency room and reported that they've been sexually assaulted. I started in 2009, keeping numbers. Just for a little background information, so I'm a registered nurse. I worked in the state of Florida, and then we moved to Wyoming. I've been doing sexual assault exams for 20 years. I took the class, the official class here in Wyoming in 2007, and then started being the same quarter in the middle of 2009. So as you can see, a lot of people were, the numbers do fluctuate up and down a little bit. Adults is anyone over the age of 18. Pediatrics, anyone under the age of 18. Anonymous is any adult who chooses not to report to law enforcement. Their numbers are already included in the other numbers. They're not added to. Questions to ask yourself. Does attire matter when someone is sexually assaulted? Does location matter? Does alcohol matter? Why do victims get blamed? It, none of that should matter, but it does. In today's society, it does. That's what we need to change. That's where we need to educate. This should not be happening. It shouldn't matter. No one goes to the bar and asks to be raped. I haven't seen one person walk around with a sign saying, "Rape me." But it happens. Services that a sexual assault victim may need. There's several here. Of all of these, I can do three as the nurse, and three only. That's why we need this RP. I need members of the community from different agencies to help me take care of these patients, to give them the services that they need. Because I can only do three of them. What is a sexual assault resource team? It's a multidisciplinary team of interagencies, individuals working together to provide all the services that a sexual assault victim needs. What is the purpose? Teams that partner together to provide interagency coordinated response to make the victim's needs a priority and holds offenders accountable and promotes public safety. What do SARTs do? We educate the community. We make sure that the available resources are there that our victims need. And we enhance evidence collection, meet victim needs, and support victim rights. There are several different types of SART. Whenever we started this, we did some research. These are a few of the ones that I found. MDTs, sexual assault interagency councils, SMART, SCART, SARTs. So there was a whole lot of information out there, and we had to choose which one would work for us. So we were stuck kind of between what a resource team and a response team. What's the difference? The response team is that everyone on the team responds that night to the victim. Everyone shows up. That really wasn't where we were in our community and where we were with our team. We weren't there yet. We're still not there yet. We're getting there. So we chose the resource team where we meet and we make sure none of our victims are falling through the services that they need. Do they need faith? Do they need mental health counseling? Do they need follow-up physician care? What services do they need and how do we get them to them? So that's why we chose the resource team, to find the members in the community that we need and get them to our table so that we can make sure that our victims get what they need. Okay. Advantages of a SART. Sexual assaults are reported more quickly. More evidence is available. Have personnel who keep victim better informed, engaged throughout the criminal justice process, and victim receives all the services necessary. And they get it in a one-stop shop. They don't have to try and figure it out on their own. Our victim advocate can help them negotiate that and get where they need to be. Team members, so you have your core team members, law enforcement, advocates, forensic examiners, and prosecutors. And then your secondary team members, faith-based providers, counselors, primary care doctors, public health, schools, EMTs, dispatchers, outreach clinics, victim rights organizations. Services provided by the team. So this is just a little bit different view of the spiral diagram that I gave you earlier. So they need a safe environment. They need the scene secured. They need evidence collection, first aid, life-threatening trauma care, a medical exam and forensic exam, HIV testing, STD prophylaxis, pregnancy prevention. They need a police report, advocate, safe house, pregnancy testing, victim restitution, prosecution, religious counseling, mental health counseling, follow-up care. Out of all these, I can do the medical exam, the forensic exam, the HIV testing, the STD prevention, and pregnancy prevention. That's it. I don't go to the crime scene, I don't investigate it, I don't report it, and I don't do any follow-up care. My time with a victim ends when they leave the emergency room. I have no follow-up with them. It goes with the medical reasons for not being contacting them afterwards. But how do I know they got where they needed to be? How do I know they got the care? I gave them the pamphlet. But when you're in a time of crisis and you're in flight or fight mode, that pamphlet is just a bunch of words on a piece of paper. It really doesn't register. That's where we need the advocate to come in behind and follow them through, get them where they need to be. dual purposes of an exam process. So we have to preserve the individual. The individual always comes first. Keep it in mind that we need to preserve evidence while we're doing that. So it's a two-stage process. We have to take care of our victim. Our victim always has to come first, but you have to keep in mind that you have another job you're doing at the same time. So, like I said, we came up with this in 2009. Our mission statement at the time was to optimize and offer a comprehensive community-wide response to sexual assault victims, providing services in a private, confidential manner. We had two goals. Develop a protocol for the sexual assault resource team with ongoing reassessment of that protocol, and develop and maintain a review process for each victim that interacts with the team at any level. Do they get what they needed? At this point in time, the Natrona County SART members are the Wyoming Medical Center, True Care, Self-Help, Casper Police Department, Natrona County Health Department, Mills Police Department, Evansville Police Department, Children's Evidence Project, Casper College, Casper Police Department, and Natrona County Sheriff's Office, which didn't show up on the bottom. I apologize. And this is the final slide, which again brings home, these are the services that our victims need. And we need everyone to come to the table, to put our prejudices aside, to put our victim first, and make sure they get the services that they need. Any questions?
I think it's just kind of a general question. What's usually the order of operation? I mean, are the victims usually checked in at the PD before they get to the hospital, or sometimes they come directly to the hospital? Or?
There's actually no order at all. The victim enters that circle at any point. I've had them come in where they reported first to the emergency room, where they reported to their counselor at school, where they reported to law enforcement first. Maybe they reported to True Care. I've had victims that reported to True Care or the health department or their family doctor. They reported to their family doctor, and the family doctor's like, I can't do this exam for you. I need you to go to the emergency room and have it done. That's why we need everyone at the table, because they enter at any point.
Thank you.
So this process is in place and available.
So this process has been starting since 2009. It's been difficult to get people to come to the table. I've given this presentation at Casper College like 3 or 4 times. I've given some presentations around town. I can tell you that I've had people come up to me and tell me, sexual assault doesn't happen here. I don't know why you're giving this presentation. And sexual assault isn't about power and control. It's about sex. So you need to quit giving that lecture. That's not true. Sexual assault is about the power and control and humiliation that you have over another individual. And until we get people to understand that it happens, and we get people to commit to not letting it happen, we're just going in a circle. We're not advancing. We need community support. We need campaigns. We need people to come forward and join those campaigns. We need people to speak out to say this is wrong, and we're going to all speak out and say it's not going to happen in our county.
I guess my solution has always been thinking we needed a format of what CAP does, but this looks like exactly kind of what I was picturing. So
we kind of stole some of their ideas, and they come to the meetings and they're on the team.
Child advocacy. What do you need from us to partner?
I think for us, you know, as we go forward, I know the Casper PD is planning their second discussion panel in May, and I think that's going to be a real opportunity of where do we go from here. But I think for me, it's difficult because I don't know if the community knows where is here, like where are we at. And so I just want to inform the community as much as possible, knowing what's available in our community. And then from there, assessing, you know, what are our current needs, where can we go from there. And so I think that's what's so important is, like I said, I don't think many people in the community are familiar that we have a CERT team. And then how can we really take this and, you know, put it to use? And it is being used, and we do utilize it for victims, but I don't know, again, if victims know that it's available. They come to our various agencies to seek help, and when they go to Wyoming Medical Center, the self-help center gets called up to the hospital. We'll go in and we'll advocate for those victims and do the follow-up care and that wraparound needs. but really how moving forward in the preventative nature of how we can kind of reduce the sexual assault that we're seeing as much as it is here. And I think there's still a big, you know, cultural stigma against it. I know there was a DA case that just went up a couple weeks ago, and one of the jury said, well, she was wearing a short dress. You know, those are the things, and he was found not guilty because of that. And so those are the things that we face as a community. When we're talking about sexual assault and how can we prevent it, and then when it does happen, how can we respond to make sure that the victims are taken care of, and as a community, making sure that we're not victim-blaming and do all those things that come with it. And so, again, it just comes back as, you know, we're only so many people. If we can educate the community and the community can go out and educate more, I think that's the first step. And so just making sure everybody knows what's available, who we are, and what's going on in our community is probably the first step. And I think that discussion panel that we'll have will be really good steps of moving forward of what's next. And I don't know what that is for our community, but I think as a group we need to probably come together and really do some intense strategic plans to address sexual assault in our community.
Just a couple of things. One, I think that it's important because I would imagine people, since we've started having this discussion with everything, as of late, not a lot of people realize we have this in our community. And I think that that's something the city can do to push that, make sure that the community knows that we have these types of services for sexual assault victims. I think that's an important part. Make sure Hope Press gets that home, whether here, to make sure that that's out there. But also the idea that we're not idly sitting, but our community actually is taking initiative to do something. And I think that needs to be commended, not only for the partners, including our own police department, but the partners being able to do that. And I think that needs to be applauded. And so whatever we can do to help that, to get that word out, the onus is on us to continue that.
Well, thank you, and hopefully we can see you guys too at the discussion panel, because I think it'd be really important to have some policymakers there too that can kind of help guide us through that process of where do we go from here. So thank you guys for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
Thanks for coming.
We'll
get your flash drive.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Thank you.
Next presenter is Aaron Clokey, who is project manager for our comp plan, and he will introduce our consulting team that is here from Fort Collins. But I also wanted to acknowledge two of our planning commissioners who have been with us on this entire process that we began last June, and that's Chairman Bob King and also Commissioner Fred Fester here tonight. So Aaron, if you would like to introduce Christina and Megan and
sure.
Take
so,
it off, sir.
Christina and Megan will kind of be going over what we've been up to this past year. Some of you remember, you were first introduced to this project back in May of 2016. So we've been at it for about the past 10 months, starting out with a robust public engagement process and really building the meats and bones of this project to really getting to a place where we feel comfortable kind of telling you where we are and getting your feedback and encouraging you to ask questions. So we have, like was said, we have Megan and Christina with Logan Simpson here, and I will let them take it away.
Well, good evening. First of all, I'm not sure where to stand here, actually. Yeah, good. So first of all, we'll go a little bit into the overview of the plan, a little bit of background. I know some of you folks are new, but I recognize a lot of familiar faces. I'll talk a little bit about the public process, knowing that we still have some outreach until May 19th. and we're looking at another couple open houses that Aaron's going to do a draft plan. We'll talk about some of the key highlights within the draft plan itself. And then Christina will also review the land use plan and the major streets plan, as those are two of the key pieces within the draft plan. And she'll also mention some next steps. So first of all, what is Generation Casper? So the name comes from the idea that your old plan was adopted in the 90s, really a generation ago. This is a long-range plan that kind of sets the stage for future development, sets the decision-making process for council, planning staff in order to make decisions on future land use development. Who cares about the plan? Well, everybody should, right? So, decision makers, they care about the plan because it offers them guidance and kind of a backup for the decisions that they're making. Business owners and residents really count on that to give a sense of transparency, to know what's going on around them. You know, everybody's concerned about property values all the time. This helps give them a sense of stability. So the public process, the key thing about this public process is that planning staff and MPO and consultants were everywhere. So starting last summer, we did a number of stakeholder interviews, so one-on-ones with folks. We went to a number of public events, art walks, food truck events, etc. Got feedback that way. There was always an online presence, whether that was through website, direct emails to folks, and online surveys. And through that outreach, we've touched about 1,800 people, which is pretty typical for a community this size. I'd say that's a good outreach number. About half of that is probably online respondents, about half of that is probably in person. So through some of those events, through interviews. And key to this outreach, I think, is that at the last set of open houses on the draft plan, we got a lot of optimistic comments. Not really any big red flags, which is kind of, we don't look for that at this stage. We hope not to get that at this stage. But we heard a lot of positive comments. People really like the draft plan and where it's at. So on that note, this is the vision. So this kind of sets the stage for the entire draft plan. So, and I am going to read this slide. In 2030, Casper serves as an economically diverse regional hub centered on lively commercial centers that embraces a strong and unique community identity through a world-class quality of life. So it is a little long, but you see kind of the optimism there, and you see the reference on economic development and quality of life. So both key components that we heard throughout the process from stakeholders and people at public events. Underneath that overall vision, there's a series of six different themes that detail a little more per elements of the comp plan itself. So endless character, really you want to be a dynamic, welcoming community. Vibrant urban center, there was a lot of talk about downtown that we heard. Making that, strengthening downtown, really making it a place for people to go, visitors alike, as well as residents. Distinctive regional hub, so really focusing on the economic development that you have now, but enhancing that and diversifying that past the energy industry. And then connectivity, so really focusing not just on streets and getting around in your cars, but focusing on being able to walk someplace and being able to bike someplace safely. Embracing the river, so being able to approach the river, use it as an economic asset, use it as a recreational asset. And then last, just that undiscovered quality of life, so really celebrating the neighborhoods, the sense of community that you have in Casper, family-friendly atmosphere, the safeness of the community. So how these work in the plan itself is that the vision kind of sets the stage. It's kind of that top-tier level. Your principles is what Christina will talk about next. And those are about, what, three or four statements per vision theme that drill down one more time. And then your goals and strategies really outline how to do this. That's what you'll be tasked with in the next couple of years.
Thanks, Megan. So we took all of the public input we've gotten so far, and there's also a large chapter on existing conditions with lots of numbers and data and trends. Where's Wyoming going? Where's Casper going? What are we seeing for generations? What's the next generation looking for in cities? So we took all of that data and we outlined the themes, and we're going to go over probably three of them. We're not going to dive into to all of them, but it's all in this beautiful document here that you can review as well. So the first one, Endless Character Principles. We really heard a lot about, you know, maintaining the culture of the Western, strong Western values. We heard a lot about beautification and even code enforcement. And so this kind of is includes all of that, but overall, we mostly heard about creating a compact city and focusing a lot on our energy in the urban core. So through this this theme, we've also come up with a new concept for this plan is a growth management boundary. So it looks at limiting where future growth can go. And this is still a lot of land, and it's based on city services, emergency services, so that Casper can really provide adequate services, adequate infrastructure for the community moving forward. The next one, Vibrant Urban Center. This talks a lot about downtown, so that we can go into how arts and culture and public spaces are really enhanced downtown. The next key one here is Distinctive Regional Hub. And we've heard a lot about, one of the key things was safe, family-friendly, economic, diverse, and increase in businesses. You know, we heard a lot about just restaurants downtown or other things people want to do with their free time. So how can this theme that focuses on how we can create a stable community through those highs and lows that we know are going to happen through a community, and focusing on a quality of life, celebrating entrepreneurs, natural recreation assets. So not taking away from what we know Casper is built on, the community of Wyoming is built on economically, but how can we add to that? So not necessarily replacing energy, but focusing on technology, and that could be related to energy, focusing on talent retention and education, focusing on quality of life and the outdoor industry. We also heard a lot about the recreation amenities and the river that really people really love about Casper. And also working with the Casper Area Economic Development Authority on their focused areas that are listed up here. The next major principle is connectivity. A lot of the funding came from the MPO, so that was a strong point in our community, or in this plan, sorry. And we looked at how transportation and land use both develop. It's kind of a chicken or the egg thing as well. If you have appropriate transportation connectivity, then you have the land uses that you desire. So we heard everything from biking and ped infrastructure to balancing arterials with residential safety. So this plan outlines how can we both balance moving people across the community, but also safe and pedestrian and bike friendly residential community. So it shows a little bit of both that. We did there's a lot of analysis on the transportation in this plan as well, looking at block corridors and access and easements and spacing of arterials and things like that. So those are the major ones. The next, quality of life, looking at arts and culture and neighborhoods, and also looking at how we can improve different types of neighborhoods within the community, embracing the river, capitalizing on outdoor recreation, both economically and through the improvement of natural assets within the river and the river corridors. So then we get to, we have all of these principles and goals, and we get to the future land use plan. The future land use plan is an illustrative map which creates the framework for the zoning code. So we take the future land use map, this is the ideal situation of these various categories that we'll go into. And that is based on all the information we've collected, takes into consideration constraints. We wanted to look at the appropriate intensities and densities and mix of land uses that a typical community should have, you know, not too much industrial, not too much housing, to really have that appropriate jobs, and housing within the community. And we came up with 9 future land use categories, all the way from your rural, sort of lower density residential, and more. So you get denser as you go up the neighborhoods. And then we have a couple different center type categories. Neighborhood centers are sort of your smaller office that are in schools and things like that that can be incorporated into a center. Community centers, higher density, and then really only have 1 urban center, which is your Old Town or Old Yellowstone District and the downtown core. So the plan outlines all of these different categories. So this is just 1 example, but you can go into all of those categories and look at what are the general characteristics, what are the primary uses, appropriate densities and floor area ratios and heights to start getting that appropriate urban form that we desire. And ta-da, here, this is what 10 months looks like into a plan. It looks better in a document than it does on PowerPoint. But you can see some core here, and the core ideas here, the neighborhood 1 is focused on the outskirts. Within the existing city limits, we followed a lot of current development patterns, but try to optimize that for what's desired. And then you can see that the optimal sort of land use patterns are showcased outside of the city limits, so that people can, developers and property owners can use this as a guide for how we should develop in the future. And integrated in the future land use map is the Major Streets Plan. Like I said, there's analysis on all these different things, auto trip reduction, access management, roadway spacing, and that comes out in our future land use plan and the major streets plan to look at where we're gonna focus mostly arterials moving forward. We don't show all the little residential streets because those are more the place of the developers, but so how the city can develop and do their part on the arterials and set up that structure. Okay, 2 more slides here and I'll wrap up and leave for questions. So how are we gonna do all of this? So Rome wasn't built in a day. This is a 10-year, 20-year plan. So if you go into the last chapter and you open up, there's a series of about 70 strategies that city and organizations all play a role within developing this comprehensive plan. So the city will do their role in providing adequate infrastructure, promoting quality of life, and then other organizations should really be focusing on how they can also implement a comprehensive plan. So one good positive thing is that we can start implementing the comprehensive plan right away, looking at different regulatory structures, different things that aren't going to cost too much money. And then we prioritize these top 4 things to sort of taking the economic outlook of the community, focusing on reducing infrastructure and long-term maintenance costs, impacts of the city services through limited growth. So that's an outcome of the comprehensive plan. Focus on zoning changes, and then rethinking infrastructure financing is in there, and then focusing on working with partners to complete the generation transfer. So that's how we're gonna do this and start implementing this plan right away. So next steps, still a draft plan, so we welcome everyone in this room's comments. You can comment online, generationcasper.com, or send Aaron an email. Then we'll integrate those public comments and begin the adoption process through going through Planning Commission and then City Council. And so you'll see us back in June. That's all we have. Questions, comments?
Maybe a question for Aaron. Aaron, we have going back to the slide that you had, the kind of proposed possible street layout.
Yeah.
For, I guess, arterials. It was back about 3 there.
Okay.
There
we go.
Sorry.
Absolutely. Yeah. Have we, with this plan, and I know on the right-hand side of the screen here, we've got some serious topographic issues, and have we kind of looked at that when we put this together?
So we definitely kept that in mind when this was put together. We go into this knowing that we have a lot of topographic issues here in Casper. These alignments are more of a guideline. These are not exact in, you know, further going down into the future. When we are looking at topographic obstacles, we know that we'll have to probably take a closer look at where exactly those roads go. So, you know, consider this more of a guide. You know, in some of the southern portions, you know, some of these, you know, we want to try to stay flexible, and you know, we go in knowing that some of these could change or they could be tweaked.
But this map could be, you know, this is something that developers ought to be looking at, that this is what we're thinking.
Absolutely.
So they don't get out 10 years and say, we didn't know that.
Exactly.
Kind of a follow-up, if I may. I know you and I, Aaron, have had conversations about some of the difficulties in getting this plan done from an economic standpoint. Basically, the fact that we're so dependent on one group of people in our lives to make things happen. And I guess this is kind of an open discussion for everybody here. I wonder if we should address stuff like that in this plan. Because we just don't have the tax base and the minerals business that we did. And I guess my position would be that we need to ask the state of Wyoming to help us. And this might be a good place to insert stuff like that, as you and I have discussed before.
Exactly. Your Honor, if I may, we have talked a lot about this, and from day one we have said that we know we're not the economic development professionals, but we have a large role to play in Casper's economic development. This plan guides land use, infrastructure, and overall Casper's quality of life. And those three things play a huge role in the future of Casper's economy. So that is reflected throughout the entire document.
Thank you, Aaron. So when the MPO Technical Committee gets together, they're prioritizing which projects should be next in the grand scheme of things from our transportation network. Do those 70 goals help them with that prioritization? Is that part of this to give some guidelines as to this is the next thing that needs to be taken care of?
Your Honor, the transportation section really kind of tackles transportation on a wide range of scales. So we're looking at a macro scale, looking at spacing, but also on a smaller scale, just how we design our streets. So there are a few projects that have been laid out that we could greatly benefit from, whether that's looking at our parking regulations, which do have a large impact on our transportation system and land use, even how we design our streets, because we don't really have a comprehensive guide on how our streets are designed, you know, in our commercial areas or residential areas. We really do try to, you know, we went into this knowing that we wanted to create strategies that were attainable, that were well defined, that's something that we could chew on. So that's a perfect example of this, giving our technical MPO technical committee something to tackle.
So we won't have streets on the, like the ones we have on the east side that we can't plow.
Yeah, that snow plowing is something we have to take into consideration when we design our streets in the future.
Any other comments? Questions?
I guess one follow-up. When you talk about the council adopting the plan, I'm not sure exactly what that means as far as commitments that we're making for or that we're obligated to future councils. What does that mean that we're adopting? That's only 7 weeks.
Well, I can touch on it from a
7 or 8 weeks from now.
Right.
And you're talking about a 20-year plan.
Right.
Kind of hard to push the yes switch without knowing what exactly we're kind of commitments are we making.
Well, the comprehensive plan is not law. It is a guideline, but it is an important guideline. Our Planning and Zoning Commission uses it every month to base their decisions on. Nothing is required of the council, but it is a standard that you would be applying to your decisions that you make in the future. Also know going forward that generally comprehensive plans should be updated every 5 years. So if things change within a few years, we know that it would need to be updated. So you're not necessarily holding a council 15 years from now accountable. That's the way I see it from Casper's perspective.
Your Honor, we also utilize this for any of funding mechanisms that we might want to go after, whether it's getting funding for some more additional trail systems that are identified in here, if we want to do anything from a street standpoint, if we want to look at, again, more development in our urban core, we need as a municipality to have a current comprehensive plan for the city. And again, we can utilize this. We will bring projects to this body individually, but we'll also have it for any of the other funding mechanisms that are available to us as municipality. And again, I look at grants most obviously, but a lot of what they talked about through the various visions are items that we can pursue a little at a time, whether it's historic preservation opportunities, the arts districts, but this comp plan will give us an approved base that we would then submit along with grant applications, that we have a document that is indicating how Casper wants to grow. But we will utilize it also within our MPO funding, back to your question. In case in point, we just got ready to do traffic counts, and Andrew Beamer is part of the tech committee, and we're looking at where we want to have our traffic counts. It's critical for us to know where we see our growth within the city of Casper, identify streets that are in key areas, and look at those numbers so that, again, we are making street improvements and development plans based on just current use. So we do that every 3 years. So this document's another item that we would utilize for some of our MPO activities that you're familiar with through the MPO tech as well as policy committee.
Do you have something, Ray?
Yeah, the only comment I was going to kind of comment on what Charlie had said. Part of it is, kind of hoping to your strategic planning, the planning that you guys have done, the conversations that you've had, that we also have faith as a council to know that this isn't a flight by night, just throw it on the table, say this is what we think you guys ought to look at doing, but we know that this is a strategic plan, conversations that you've had, and so that part of the reason why we wanted this firm to come in and do that opportunity, that we kind of place a little bit of trust that we know that, your strategic planning for us for the next several years, put that in there. So kind of laying that faith, I guess, if you want us to say, in the hands of saying that with you two there. So, if that makes sense.
Bob and Charlie.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. First of all, you guys have put a lot of work into this. I have no idea how many meetings you guys have put together to do this.
But
believe me, I'm convinced that anybody that wanted to have input in this had more than ample opportunity to do so. So I just commend you for your work. And then the other thing I'm really happy to hear is that this is going to be a dynamic document. I don't think we want to sit there when we see things changing in 2 years for some reason. That's the time to jump in and make modifications. Unlike what we did on the last one, when Second Street, there was not even a dream out there. So, and I guess the third thing is, just thank you. You guys have done a great job. And we appreciate your efforts.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just one more question on the plan. About 3 years ago, we adopted a non-motorized transportation plan through the MPO. It was basically about pedestrians and bike travel. Was that incorporated into this?
The bike pathways and trails.
Large acronym. Yeah. Yes. Your Honor, yes, that's a good question. That plan was heavily incorporated into this plan, along with many other previously adopted plans. We really tried to make sure that we weren't reinventing the wheel where we didn't have to. So, absolutely.
I'll echo Bob's comments.
This is actually a requirement for many federal programs to have this in place, is that correct?
Okay.
Anyone else?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
direction do you need from us tonight?
This is just, Your Honor, an update. And so, again, as they indicated, they'll be back in June. And we'll be doing some more public engagement, I think, in a couple weeks here. So
right.
We'll be out and about, and you all will get those invitations. So it's just purely an update, and we've been very pleased with the availability that Logan Simpson has made to our community.
You guys getting to know the road between here and
Fort Collins?
Yes. Yeah. 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 Like, mostly it was dry.
Hotter
today.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having you guys.
Thank you.
For all your hard work.
So, hello, Your Honor, Council members. I'm here, and I promise it'll be short. I see you have a long agenda. To recommend at your May 2nd, your first meeting in May, that you approve a sole source purchase. Boy, I'm getting no copy. For a piston rod. For our balers. If you recall, your second meeting in March, you approved a contract for recycling industrial repairs to actually repair our gather cylinders, which are the big long cylinders. And I brought with me Sean Orzlak, who is a baler expert now. He's been working on our balers for probably 4 years now to kind of give some visual aid about what the whole system looks like. And that contract, We knew there was damage to the actual cylinder itself, and it needed to be rehomed, and that the head and the Teflon seal needed to be repaired. And they also measured the rod, the piston rod, and we didn't anticipate that there was any problems with the piston rod, but there were. So I'm going to have Sean give you some visual demonstrations of how the system works together. And so you understand the reason it's a sole source is because another cylinder company will not make one piece of a cylinder system and warranty it. They have to do the whole system together. So that's why it's a sole source, and it's kind of a strange sole source. So Sean, I'm gonna let you explain baler cylinders to us.
Okay, Your Honor and council members, first, what I have here is just a picture of the cylinder that we're talking about on a trailer, just so you can get an idea of scale. The cylinder weighs 17,500 pounds, so it's a very large cylinder. Then looking at the end of the cylinder, into the inside of it, what you're looking at is the piston head here, and then part of the cylinder wall. What we knew we had damaged with was this inside of the cylinder wall had scoring and some problems from a previous home job. And then we knew that the Teflon ring, this is from a much smaller cylinder, but this is the Teflon that would be around here where these seals are, that it was damaged as well. So that was the original estimate from our IR, was to do that work. They were gonna take the cylinder, rehome the inside of it, and because it would then be a bit larger, they were gonna make a new head and replace the Teflon through this area. And those repairs have been done. However, what they found out was the rod from one end to the other was bowed and actually bent. So my first question is, how could that happen? And the response was that in hardening the rods, that it's a metallurgical process that requires the rod to be heated and then quenched to get the hardness up. And that if that wasn't done properly, that as it cools, it can cause the rod to warp. So what we're asking for right now is for the repair of this portion of the cylinder. As Cindy said, it's a functional system, so it's not really possible to have another shop just build that piece and still get a warranty for the entire component.
Is that the actual ring size?
No, this is actually off of a smaller cylinder.
Okay. What's the operating pressure?
The system runs at around 4,000 PSI. So
that becomes very important when you talk about the tolerance inside the cylinder. So between, obviously, this seal, there's not much room from the edge of the head to the inside of the cylinder. That tolerance becomes very important the higher you go in pressure. So in a 4,000 PSI system, it's very important to have a very good seal.
Charlie and then Chris.
Sean, have you been fighting this baler problem from the get-go?
Not quite from the get-go, but for a vast majority
of
it.
How far back does it go now?
2010 is when they were installed.
Yep. 7 years. How long does it seem?
Quite a bit longer.
You mentioned warranty. There's no warranty on this shaft?
There actually is a warranty on the cylinder system. The last agreement that Bill Lubin helped us with the manufacturer and John Peterson, they did guarantee the cylinders for a year. And so we kept all the documentation and had the manufacturer out here for the inspection of one of them to show that they were leaking, and we had a problem during that 1 year. So we do plan on following up with a warranty claim afterwards.
And how much have we spent so far on the honing, the rehoning?
The original contract was for $120,000. So this is an additional $60,000. It's $30,000 per piston. It's a lot of steel. Those pistons are a lot of steel. I know, when you think $30,000, I could go buy a car.
16 feet?
16 feet long.
And yeah. Diameter of
18 inch. Rod.
Well, we still think, sorry, Paul, we still think there's a reasonable chance that it will finally work.
Absolutely.
I think this
we've done this like 8 times now, yeah. Right? That we thought this is going
to
be the solution.
You know, I want to share the story, not to embarrass Sean or anything, but he and one of the workers who've been just working on this intimately for the last 4 years, when they came back and what the cylinder guy said, this is why you've been having all these problems, is because this rod was never manufactured in tolerance by your manufacturer. They were like, he's like so excited. It's like, this is actually going to work now. And we finally, I mean, we've been wondering for a long time why each baler operated a little differently. And even the manufacturer couldn't answer that question. It's because they were out of tolerance, those rods. And so they weren't having the same production rate on each one. So I'm really thrilled that staff really thinks this is it and they're finally going to work like we purchased them new. So that part's exciting.
And would that have caused the scoring then?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, a rod that's 3/8 of an inch out of whack from end to end on 15 feet, that's huge.
Yeah.
Sure.
It was out 5/8 of an inch on one of them and 1/4 of an inch on the other one, which is huge.
I thought it read 0.38.
Yeah. Rounding.
In very simple terms, what was explained to me was that this system generally is the linear actuator. So you're trying to move the load from point A to point B in a straight line. So as you can imagine, if you've got a bend in the system and you're trying to move a heavy load in a straight line, you've got problems all over the system. Everything has to be true and plumb and run in a very straight fashion.
No one would have guessed.
No, there's not really anything during regular operation.
No, he's trying to push the piston sideways down the bore. I mean,
yeah.
7 years.
Yeah.
So when we file this warranty claim, can we add emotional damage?
Well, if you're being serious, what the attorneys have told me is no.
Other questions? Go ahead.
Well, I, and maybe we've covered it, but when we're talking about the warranty, is it the inside scoring that we're talking about? It sounds to me like that rod wasn't manufactured right, so why is this our problem? Why isn't the company paying for it?
So that's why we're going to follow up with a warranty claim, because the cylinder shop that actually did this work has mathematical equations to show as evidence that they were not manufactured properly. So that's good evidence, but as you know, legal issues cost money, so I don't know what we'll get out of it at this point, but we're definitely going to follow up.
Okay.
Anyone else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
From
we'll get her done someday.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
In your honor, if we could do thumbs up and then it would be brought forward to the council meeting next Tuesday. So thumbs to you forward.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Liz.
Okay. Annual.
Girl.
Yeah. It's that time of the year. In your packets over the weekend, we would have sent out an executive summary for our annual action plan. Would anybody need an extra copy of that? Okay. There's you there. We are in year three of our consolidated annual action plan with funding that we received from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And each year, our housing community development technician, who is Joy Clark, prepares this executive summary. She goes out into the community, which I'm going to share here in a few minutes, and kind of finds out what the needs are, what's worked over the years with the monies, and how we would be best allocating our CDBG money. Now, what's happened this year is that we do have some early indications from the Trump administration that CDBG funding may be cut. But at this point, we have been instructed by HUD to go ahead and prepare our annual action plan, which will actually be presented to you on June 6th. So we're giving you the work session presentation this evening. We'll establish a public hearing date on this next Tuesday. But what Joy has put together for the funding, and we were asked to hold it steady with what we received this last year, is we are still looking at the allocation this past year was $258,000, which she has prioritized as far as funding is at the top of page two of this handout I just passed out to you, which is to focus that funding on transportation programs, which are for the bus tokens for our low-income riders on both the bus and CATSE. They are income-qualified JOY documents, income-qualified, as well as disability, veteran status, and pretty much an age type group. And again, as much as we can do that anonymously, but HUD wants to verify that the recipients are in fact the low income clientele. She's also indicated that she'd like to continue some of the work that we've been doing over the last 5 years up at Life Steps campus to truly bring that campus, and we will be doing a tour of it this summer, really up to truly the potential that the Life Steps campus does have. And not only for the residential opportunities for low income, but also the complementary services that go along with the needs for just a nice place to live, whether it's educational, healthcare, cooking and nutrition classes, and just an outdoor quality of life for especially the women with children to have the playground component and on-site daycare opportunities and education. So with Life Steps Campus Care, we're looking at $175,000 that we'd like to plan for this coming year, primarily for the replacement of the fire suppression system in Building F, which is a large residential unit, and then the fire alarm system in Building C, K, L, E, and F, which all, if you need to know which ones those are, they are gymnasiums for our overnight shelters, they are a kitchen that we have on there, we have the it's a lockdown facility for young children that are concerned about suicidal tendencies, and then we also have ENF, which are primarily, again, residential. The other general administration costs are for the pay, Joy's pay, and then city core revitalization activities is for the matching facade grants. We have some carryover funding that we have at this point built into the plan, and that's indicated. HUD has asked for us to put together in this annual action plan three scenarios. And so the one, which is also noted towards the bottom of page two, talks about if we get more than what we received last year, where would we spend it? At this point, Joy has put that increase into the transportation programs, again for additional bus tokens, and into the housing rehab assistance program, which is where we have applicants come forward, a lot of seniors in North Casper that need hot water heaters. And you all are nodding because we have done this and we've heard the stories and the thank yous. Handicapped ramps for citizens that need access, wider door frames. So
emergency rehabilitation does have a great use and need in this community. So if we get more than what we've estimated, that's where the allocation would be, and you'll hear more about this in the official presentation. If it is lower than where we would pull this at this point, what we're proposing is to looking, Life Steps Campus would replace the fire suppression system and we would continue using the existing fire alarm system. We are fortunate that Fire Station 3 is right there on 12th Street at Beverly. And so if there are issues, Fire Station 3 is very, very aware of Life Steps Campus and has responded extremely quickly in the times that if we have an emergency call. Further accounts that could be reduced as we would reduce the city core revitalization or the matching grants. We hesitate on reducing bus tokens, and you'll see why, but that would be another place to deallocate. If that comes, we will be back before you to make that official. We're not going to just do it willy-nilly. That would be a formal presentation to council. And in the event that we get no allocation received by the city, we will have some carryover funding that our plan is to direct that to the Life Steps Campus and invest in that property. We do have critical needs there, and again, Casper Housing Authority manages for that for us. They themselves look into grant programs to keep that campus alive, and we would count on them. Again, they receive HUD funding too, but they have become very creative in the management opportunities they have provided that campus since they took over 2.5 years ago. The plan from the feds is to let us know by the end of May so that we may, and this is the last paragraph, so that we may finalize this draft at the June 6th meeting we'll be presenting. So again, we're getting close to some of those dates. We may not submit it to HUD until the actual amount is known. So we should know by the time you all see us again the first part of June with that public hearing. Now, what I wanted to also pass out to you is Joy, in accordance with the federal requirements for public outreach, over the end of last week, Packet had already gone out to all of you, but she had a public meeting on Friday evening, and then she also had a public meeting this past Sunday. So she went up Friday evening to Life Steps Building K, which is the, again, the cafeteria, the kitchen area on the campus. Four people attended that meeting. She went to King's Corner, which again is downtown right there at Beach and First Street. 47 people attended that public meeting. Joy has been outstanding in finding ways to reach out to our most needy population, to get them to come to areas where they are comfortable coming to talk about what are their needs in Casper. And I just wanted you all to have this because, again, it had come out after the packet went out. But I thought those bullets, as council members, that you would like to read, again, some of them relate to the CDBG program, but some are just human interest. And she talked to a lot of folks there. And again, we try to make it in a very neutral location so people feel welcome and warm. So what I would be looking for this evening, Your Honor, is again to continue to move forward with the publication processes. We will continue to seek public input. And then this next Tuesday would be setting the public hearing, and then you would see us in June. So. But we'd be happy to entertain the questions too. Make any suggested changes to this draft.
Questions? Okay, thumbs? Okay,
thank you.
I want to write love letters to the administration so they get more money.
It would be nice.
All right, city owned property bids, Craig Collins. Hello.
Hi. Your Honor, members of council, won't bore you with the details. You were all there at the bid opening. You all know we have 7 bids total. Want to go through those tonight real quick to get some direction on whether the council would like to proceed or reject the bids that were received. And then at an upcoming meeting, we will formally accept bids or formally reject bids and enter into contracts and set up closings and that kind of stuff. So tonight we're just looking for some direction. So starting with fire station number 6 out in Paradise Valley, the appraised value was $230,000. The highest bid was $182,000, and it does appear to be a valid bid. Photo ID was provided, and the articles of organization were provided for Z Holdings LLC, who is the high bidder. So we'll start with that one. Any questions?
Just a comment, not really a question, just the fact that, you know, it's under the appraised value, so that's the trouble that I have with this compared to some of the other ones. In your experience or history with this, putting it out for bid or rejecting the bids, do you see more interest after that has happened and the notice has gone out again? Or
not always. I can't remember which properties in particular, Your Honor, but the we did receive people after the bids closed, bidding period closed, that wanted to submit and misunderstood the timing of those bids. So I can't say whether we would get better or worse bids, but there was additional interest.
Just follow up with that. On that same guideline, we have a bid process. We have the bid with special stipulations, so hopefully they develop it or use it so it's just not sitting there. And then they're sitting on it, so it's the value is increased. Would you see just listing it with, you know, a realtor or anything like that? Would that be beneficial to try to get that?
I'll probably defer to Mr. Lubin on that. I don't believe that that's an option. The two options that we looked at were an auction, a live auction, and the bidding, the closed bid process.
Okay. Thank you.
Comment. I don't know anything about appraisals, but I don't know how you appraise a fire station.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like there's a comp somewhere. I don't know how accurate that would be or how you would determine it. I mean, we have full discretion to reject if we choose to, but I have the same question, Jesse, if we get more. Later, I guess I'm inclined to think if this is the best we can get through the bid process, we should go
through it. So we can go through all of them first.
We'll go through all of them first. Okay. Next one on the list is the 777 Bernadine Street, just to the north of the River Valley Builders site. Appraised value is $145,000. We did receive two bids, one for $70,000 and one for $60,000. The one for $70,000 high bid was not accompanied by a photo ID as was requested. However, the high bidder did provide his driver's license after the bidding process in case the council would accept it. So again, $145,000 appraised and 70 and 60 with the bids.
Bob, I'm impressed.
I have a little problem with the folks that didn't provide a driver's license. From where I sit, if we award the bid to somebody that didn't meet the bid requirements as it was posted, we open ourselves up for a really bad issue. And so first of all, I would just, for whatever it may be worth, I would suggest that we reject those bids and then look at the remaining one based on whether we want to sell it for that price.
Okay. Moving on to 334.
I agree with Bob that if we establish criteria and then we don't follow it, what's the point of the criteria? We either remove them or we stick to them. So. Well, it doesn't seem like a big deal, and the guy can bring it in later. The other people did adhere to it. So.
Moving on, 334 Lark.
appraised value $30,000. Received one bid for $5,000, and the same individual, photo ID was not provided. And the final one was Wolf Creek Cemetery, appraised value $345,000. We received one bid for $379,500. The problem with this one was that the bidder put a contingency on his bid that water was available to serve 30 single family homes. The notice clearly stated that it was as is, where is, and there were no guarantees or warranties. So it's up to the council which one to do that one as well.
And a late driver's license.
Yes, he did have a late driver's license as well.
The last one was an LLC, though, am I correct?
Yes, we had provided a resolution of directors authorizing purchase of corporate property. However, the signatures couldn't be verified.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate that.
Question.
So this last one had a contingency on it. We said there wasn't. It was going to be sold as is. Then it provided the driver's license, and it's an LLC. Did we get the articles that we requested on?
Not the articles. They provided a written resolution of directors authorizing purchase of corporate property, but it was not notarized, and I couldn't. There was no printed name. I can't tell who signed it.
I mean, so in my mind, we've got Lark, Wolf Creek, one bid at Bernadine that did not meet the initial criteria. Everything was filed correctly on station 6, and the low bid on Bernadine was correctly submitted. Am I right on that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Other comments? Back.
I don't like it. Just the fact that more people submitted interest after the fact, people can't even fill out the application form or send in the criteria that we put out there, and then we have contingencies on big ticket item, and still going with that, not sending everything that we asked for. So I won't be in support of any of them.
If we do rebid, the cemetery property is adjacent to other city. It's already part of the city, so we have the capability to run lines. I assume.
We passed this around. Mr. Beamer provided this earlier, and that's based on topography and elevation. And the shaded area, I believe, is
where we provide water to that shaded area. Everything outside is a different pressure zone. So we would have to run a new. We got zone 3 water.
That's the zone you're talking about.
We can provide water to that area. Everything outside that area, within that red cemetery boundary, we cannot provide water to currently.
Well, okay, so that outer line is the cemetery
that's
boundary.
Correct. Yes, and we can provide water to that shaded area.
Follow up, Your Honor. So, did we, when we described the property, did we say that we would be able to provide water to that section? Would that have increased the appraised value if we had done that?
I don't know what the appraisal was based off of.
So it cost us a lot of money to get water to the rest of it.
We've got zone 3 water in Valley Hills, and we got zone 3 water at Capitol Mountain Road and Point Boulevard. So yeah, we got to bring those water mains into Wolf Creek. It would exceed the value of the aquifer.
Thank you. I guess that's really the question. Yeah, we'd lose money on the deal.
I hate to see you guys go to all this work and then throw it away, but we didn't have one bid that actually met every requirement.
Yeah. I'm with Jesse and anybody else, but I certainly
not comfortable with it, probably vote against it.
What, what's the problem with the fire station, Bob?
I thought that one was square one.
Yeah, there's three.
It's just lower than appraised.
That's the only one that met everything.
Met everything.
And then a little bit on Bernadine.
Yeah.
So is the question on the table by individual or by the group?
Individual would be most helpful, Your Honor.
Yes, you. Each one of those bids is a separate parcel. You have to reject all the bids within each separate parcel. So you can reject them all if you would like, but right. You have the right to take each one and reject each as a separate bid package because they were.
What were the numbers on the fire station? I'm sorry.
230 appraised, 182.
To my mind, Your Honor, there's two reasons to do this. One is we get some cash into the city coffers, but the other reason is we're putting these properties back into use. And so I think if those two bids met criteria, I'm in favor of accepting them, even though they're below appraised value. I agree with Jesse that if people can't follow a very simple set of guidelines, and we certainly can't do the cemetery because we're committing to do something that is a... Well, we just can't agree to that contingency. But I think if we do rebid it, it makes sense to me to say that this land comes with access to water for that section, which might increase its value.
Chris?
Madam Mayor, I would support the Station 6 bid. I know it's considerably lower than it's worth. I can only assume that it's going to have to be torn down, and somebody will build something else there, which would be nice. And Bernadine is a lot lower, but it's a proper bid. I would accept the bids on 6 and Bernadine, but it would be a low bid on Bernadine because they're the only ones that follow the criteria.
But those two did have all the proper documentation.
They did.
That would support your position.
I suspect that's the way everybody else feels, so accept those two, and you reject the other two.
We got to take them one at a time.
Yeah.
Fire Station 6. Bernadine?
At the $60,000.
And then LARC?
We have two votes on that.
Yeah, LARC didn't meet their requirements, right?
Right.
Correct. And Wolf Creek didn't meet their requirements. Read it. What's your pleasure with the last two that we didn't vote for?
Those are our only options, right? Keep them or rebid? I move to rebid them.
Everybody like to see them rebid?
I don't have a problem. As long as staff doesn't have to put a lot more work into it.
Okay. So, thumbs to rebid?
On LARC and the cemetery, right?
Yep.
Is it okay for us to add the access to water to the bid, to the property description? Okay.
Anything else you guys need from us? Thanks. Hey, dispensing rooms, Miss Tracy.
Our council members. At the last legislative session, there were 5 liquor laws that the state chose to adopt. And the city staff met with the Natronic County liquor dealers about a week and a half ago. And there were about 30 people present at that meeting. There were some town clerks and the liquor dealers, of course. And the result of that meeting, you know, they want, there's a lot of things we have to look at with our city ordinances. So the number one priority is on the dispensing rooms. What we heard is that several projects are already in process and with construction. And they were assuming that with the state liquor law change that automatically meant that the city ordinances would follow, not understanding that we have to go through the process of changing our own city ordinances. So, with that being the case, what what we would like to do is focus on changing the dispensing rooms, as you'll see in the attachment with the memo. Biggest changes from dispensing room to licensed building. So it opens that up. It's been something that's always been kind of a point of contention between the state and the local licensing authority, which is by city ordinance as far as what the dispensing room actually is. So, for example, in Wyoming Ale Works, they have a temporary dispensing room knowing that this state law was going to change. So that's the impetus of us bringing this forward, is just so that you'll know at the next council meeting, we're going to bring to set a public hearing and then work on the language with the city attorney's office on our ordinances. So you'll see a draft of that, I think it's May 13th. May 16th is hopefully when you will be able to, prior to that with our packet, that's when we'll actually have the public hearing and the first reading of the ordinance at that time. So that's the number one priority, and there will be other things to bring up, but that was the main focus of tonight for me, to just bring that to your attention, and that we're going to be moving forward on that. That it will help the local businesses that are in construction right now, so that they don't have to have additional expense with our ordinance being out of sync with state law.
Do you have a question, Bob?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. I noticed when I went through this, Tracy, and perhaps I don't have my ducks in a row, which never happens to me, but we did have, we amended it to 19-year-olds enter the dispensing room,
yeah,
versus the state law, which we're trying to keep close to, which says 18.
Right, and after we changed that, then we had another interpretation as far as with the restaurant, the serving room, is that, yes, that's something that we'll work with legal to make sure that we're in sync with the state.
Okay. It sounds like the state would allow 18-year-olds to go in there, but still,
well,
can't serve.
If I may, Madam Mayor,
yeah,
that's an interesting issue, because the way they redrafted the statute is over 18, and before it said 18 or over.
Right.
And so now if you're over 18, is that 19? And so when they did the legislative bill, it's a little unclear. And so we're going to have to look at this a little bit. Our prior ordinance was copacetic with the prior statute.
Yeah,
the new
that
statute,
was the 21, right?
And so 18 for dispensing rooms.
Okay.
It's an interesting, we got to look at this a little bit.
Okay.
We'll try to make those reconciled. The safe route is to stay at 19, and you have the power to make the changes you want for local licensing. So you don't necessarily have to go with 18. I think there's a question under the code, and it came up with a liquor dealer earlier this week, so we're trying to see how that works out.
That's so they're aware of the issue.
It is, yeah, it's a good question, and it's an issue we're going to have to explore.
All right.
A lot of details have got to work
through. Other questions, Jesse?
Yeah, just to follow up with what Bob just mentioned, that was my question too. So what if we just worded it the same way that the statute is written? Is that an option?
I'm not sure how to interpret it at this particular point, whether an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old can go into the dispensing room. I think it was an oversight by the legislature in the drafting of the statute.
Yeah, it says, actually, no consumption of alcoholic beverages or malt beverages shall be permitted within the dispensing room, comma, nor shall any person other than employees over 18. So,
is that 18.1 or
exactly
19?
Sure, that's what they intended.
Well, the old statute said 18 or over.
I know, but
well, I don't
surely
know.
Their intent was 18 years in one day.
Yeah,
is over 18.
That could be your reading, Councilman Powell, but I don't know how the legislature intended that.
But we, at any rate, we can change it.
We can change it.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we need to explore it.
Other questions?
Thank you.
So, Your Honor, members of council, we had put into your packets with the agenda a process that was followed for the previous filling of Councilwoman Mundell's position. And truly the main steps being to announce the vacancy, which we would do via press release, and to determine a time that we want to have the position open. Then we would be working with council to get interview dates set with you. And in the materials we sent, they were 10-minute interviews. There were questions that were published so that you all would be able to ask the same questions of all the candidates. And we conducted those out in the chamber so that they were televised and open to the public. And then the main step again then would be the swearing in at a regularly scheduled council meeting. So what we are asking for this evening is permission to post the vacancy and to look at the amount of time, and then staff would take it from there with the protocols to getting the position out there. And looking at the calendar, probably the soonest that we would start the time frame with your direction would be Monday, May 1st. So that would allow us time to get some of the publication noticed, and then we would run it for a period of either 2 to 3 weeks.
How long was it open last time?
From what we were looking at, that was open for over just about 2 weeks.
I would say post it on Monday and give it 2 weeks.
We would be looking perhaps at 5 p.m. on Monday the 15th would be the 2 week period.
Would that be the interview time?
No, that would be the time to get all the applications in by 5 p.m. Monday, and then we would again validate it and report to you all Tuesday evening at the council meeting. We would have an update.
Chris, you're saying 2 weeks from Monday. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from the 1st. So
Monday, May 1st, and close it Monday at 5 o'clock p.m. And then we would update.
And we would be right on track for council meeting.
Well, I don't know if we wouldn't be able to get the interview scheduled.
But we would have the.
And staff's interest is if we can possibly get the individual in place for some of these budget meetings that would be upcoming.
That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm.
Which also would kind of, I think we discussed a little bit while back about this, but there was, I think we ought to just have one interview session. We can't, if we're going to try and get somebody on board quickly to help out, they're either going to have to make that time and date, or they can submit a written report if they want. But I think they're trying to accommodate, if we get like 10 folks again, 9 or 10 folks, they're trying to accommodate their schedule. We're trying to get something done so they can be on board with budget meetings. I'm not sure we can pull them off.
I just say this is what we're doing.
This is where we are.
Yeah.
And they can take priority in time slots. I don't care how we do that.
Yeah.
Agreed. Thank you, Mayor. Would it help just to, send all the applications as they come in just to council for us to review them, or was that done in the past? Do you guys see that as beneficial? That could speed
Your
up
Honor,
the process, too.
I'm going to defer. Tanya, were you in the city manager's office with that process?
I was, and I don't remember if, I don't believe we emailed them because it does contain confidential personal information. After it closed, yeah, I think we compiled them all and gave packets.
Cover letter. Sorry, cut you off.
That's okay.
Throwing it out there.
Yeah, I don't think we emailed them as they came in to everybody, but we did compile them at the end and get them to you guys.
From packets, right?
And Your Honor, we don't see you the next evening, so we have
We could have them for you that evening on the 16th.
Perfect. We'd be able to look at them before we did an interview or had.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely.
Process good.
I think 2 weeks is sufficient. The position's been open. Anyone who's interested is already thinking about it. So, that 2 weeks to get the application in is more than enough.
Other questions? You're good with it?
Thank you.
Okay. Scorecard.
Okay, visual aid. On your typical council meeting agendas, we have the grid system laid out that ties back to the 2015 council goals of downtown infrastructure and recreation. With your new goals that we have recently been working to finalize the language, the text, which will eventually get posted in here, we're not certain that they're going to fit to the same degree as scoring agenda topics, public safety, as well as asset preservation and resource management. So we wanted direction as to whether
there is interest in having staff continue to try to place agenda items into this scorecard.
Okay.
I would say remove it. I think it's too subjective because we could wordsmith anything to fit, and I think it wouldn't bear much meaning. And, you know, it would be, the concept was that then each department would be doing more in depth goals and objectives. Theirs would be measurable towards those greater goals, and I don't think there'd be much value to it.
I stopped looking at it like a year ago, so.
I don't know that I looked at it that close, but I think it's a way of making a statement of good faith to the community that we have a strategic plan, and the things we're doing are intended to implement that plan, and that it isn't just something on the wall. And that was the idea of it anyway, was to,
right,
was to have our actions sort of categorized as, mm-hmm, this is something we're doing because we said we would. That's the argument.
It just doesn't work as well this year.
And I'm not going to, I mean, it's not that important to me, but I mean, that was the intent of it, was to make a statement that we are serious about our plan.
Bob or Jesse, Ray?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the time it was meant to highlight the goals that we had set as a council. I think we're different time, different council, different priorities, and I think that's okay. I think it's okay to start having different focuses, and I don't think it's going to hurt me if it's not on there.
I can live without it.
Okay, everybody's good without it?
Yeah.
Well, just one quick comment. I concur that if what our new goal may be posted as is pretty difficult to put in those boxes. But one of the concepts I think that we were trying to do is report back to our constituencies, you know, where we were putting our efforts. And perhaps there is an easier way to look at doing this. What departments are going to? I mean, if it goes to the street department, here's the money that went there. During all, it went to the sewer department. That's still under the same department. And would that be a logical division, is where we spend the money? Just for your consideration. No. I'm saying this isn't going to work, so I think we don't need that. If we did it by, it's basically looking at budget numbers versus actual spending numbers.
And Your Honor, during our council, you'll hear about this in a minute, but with council prep, we're starting already to work our presentations around the goals that you identified. So you will hear that in our presentation.
Okay.
Good. All right. Thank you.
July 4th meeting.
I guess that's me.
Yeah.
This year we have something happening I don't think I've ever seen in my 20 years in the city. And that is that your council meeting is going to fall on July 4th this year. And so the question came, how do we move the meeting? It's interesting, we have a little bit of a conflict between a resolution that was passed in 2000 with our ordinance that established irregular meetings. So I'm going to make this brief, but under the Public Meetings Act, you can establish your regular meetings by ordinance, by resolution, or by bylaw. And council years ago established it, of course, by ordinance. It's very short. It just says the regular meetings of the city council shall be held on the first and third Tuesday of each month, period. So that's the law, that's you have to hold your meetings. Then we have a resolution that was passed in 2000. Again, it states that you'll hold your meetings not less than two per month on the first and third Tuesdays. Other regular meetings shall be fixed by resolution, spread on the minutes of the council proceedings, and published in the official newspaper. And in the case of the time of meeting shall occur on a Sunday or a legal holiday, then such meeting shall be deemed to be called and should be held on a day so approved by the governing body. The problem is a resolution really can't trump your ordinance, and you don't have any provision in the ordinance to change your meeting. And so if you look in your packet, I'm proposing that we consider an ordinance amendment that simply adds the language,
in the event any such regular meeting falls on a holiday recognized by the city. The city council may, by resolution, cancel and reschedule the meeting to a different date and time. This resolution shall be spread on the minutes of the council proceedings and published once in a newspaper general circulation as defined in section 15-1-116, which defines your legal newspaper. That way, if you have a meeting in the future for council that falls on a holiday, we can just pass a resolution and reset the date, publish the resolution, and on we go. I would propose that to you as a change, and we can get that done before the July 4th meeting. And then on the third reading of this ordinance, we would propose a resolution to reset that date of July 4th to a new date. You said, and I need to have some direction perhaps tonight. Do you want to move that meeting to like July 5th on a Wednesday, or just move it to your very next council meeting that comes up anyway? The problem with moving it 2 weeks is we have bills and claims that fall due that we need to pay. And so I would suggest that we consider, or that you consider, actually giving a date before your next regularly scheduled meeting. So this is simple. That's pretty much it.
Okay.
I would say we move forward with that. And then my preference would be probably the 5th, so that people get paid. That's a long time to go in between.
Okay. And that'd be a Wednesday.
Right.
Good with everybody?
Good.
Thumbs, we're good? Okay.
I would say, Madam Mayor, if the date doesn't, as we get closer to this, doesn't work out for the 5th, we can adjust that, because we'll adjust that with the resolution. That won't be established by the ordinance. That'll work. Thank you.
That was too easy.
I know.
I can
use
it. That's okay.
Good. All right. City manager reports.
A couple things. Before we get into the budget review piece, we are, if you can kind of look at some ceiling pallets missing, we are in the process currently of getting some enhancements put into this room for recording our work sessions. And instead of having the blinking mic that is located in the center of the table, our IT department has been working for the past few months to get a system that we can have the microphone installed in the ceiling and then run into this adjacent room so that we can get the recordings done safely and securely without jeopardizing, as we saw this evening, PowerPoint presentations by our guests that might accidentally cut off the recording system. So we're pretty pleased about that. We went out, got multiple costs and so forth, but that's going to begin to get installed. There will probably be one leadership lunch date in early May where we'll move in, upstairs into the city manager meeting room, where there is going to be more installation here in the ceiling tile. So, but that's, again, one of the big plans. And then the screen will in fact be replaced with a monitor system, TV monitor system, which is again all part of our budget, so that we can have a little bit better projection capabilities. Not that the screen's great, and because it is, but the rec center is going to adopt the screen and repurpose it out for rec center. So that will be a change that you'll see in early May, and particularly in this room. So a little bit of technology. Okay, with the budget review, which is typical of what BH has done on a quarterly basis, he will typically present the quarterly financials. We are going to do that here actually in a couple of weeks with the Council Finance Committee. So those are getting finalized, and that committee will be called together to review those, and then from there we'll take direction to get them also to Council. We are also, as I indicated, in the we are hot and heavy into budget prep. So again, looking at everything that goes on this time of year, and we'd reported in the media that we have stayed, I believe, truly on track, and VH had set us up very well, and we can confidently say that. Had worked very closely with staff to get everything in place, and whether it's Kirk Gunderson, Pete Myers, Tracy, Fleur Trimmel, there is a solid team that's been working with the work that had been done. So we are continuing to be ready to stay on our timeline. Renee had, I believe, published either to your calendars, or there may have been a handout on those budget dates that we will be doing presentations to you at the end of May over a series of a few evenings. So that's still the plan as usual, and we are working with a little bit of a different format that staff believes will be very fitting in a tough economic time. So we will continue to keep leadership team updated on progress at our Thursday meetings, but feel free to ask any of us at any point what's going on, but right now we are definitely still on track with the prep and moving forward with that. Tracy, anything to add? Okay. Great. Okay. With the eclipse update, we passed out in your packets a summary report, which is again something that Tracy and her team had developed. Carla had been doing a cumulative report. Tracy's got a copy of this cumulative report. But this last week, there had been requests, actually in the department head meetings, to look at changes each week. And so that's what this summary is items that have changed over the prior week. Whether it's how many spots we have reserved for camping, any other events that have gotten added. And at leadership this last week, there was also a request by Councilman Walsh to look at kind of some of the operations component, what goes on not just from the public safety component, but also operations related to maybe some of our public services. And again, we are focusing truly on the city of Casper with this. That is what our resources are being utilized for, is city resources to the city component of the eclipse. And we are going to staff, as of this morning with the department head meeting, you'll get an update on that piece with more of an operations as to what's going on. But again, we are trying to stay focused on our core with staff and finances to make this a celebratory event, but not to go beyond our means.
And Liz, I wanted to, and I know you had asked at leadership about that.
Yes.
That, so I double checked, I looked into it, and I did ask, and they had said that there was a full PIO command center. There will be a full PIO command center set up during the festival. Right now, what they're doing, everybody's kind of on their own, but they're communicating every month. So it sounds like it's working together. That's what I was told. So I wanted to pass that on to you, Chris.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that they've got those integrated resources working together, and they've got what they need. Not for shorthand, or we could use this, and it's too late now to make a decision. Let's make sure that that's not fund mediocrity. Right?
And again, Your Honor, we looked with fire, PD, and then public services for the core areas. Okay. All with that public safety goal in mind. Okay. And Your Honor, Tracy has an addition.
Just one more thing with the summary. You'll notice that the event center, the campsites are at 100% capacity. And so we're not expecting to expand that. That's full. And just in case you get questions from the public on that, it's full, and that's as good as it's going to get for the event center.
Are we talking about the parking lot? Is it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
Wow. We're going to have people at the check-in places, you know, $10 a head or whatever it is, or is it freebie?
I think they pay. They reserve their spot.
So if you wanted to be up there, Councilman, may have to hang out here with us.
Okay, future agenda review?
Yes. Okay, May 2nd, next week, on the agenda is we are establishing a couple of public hearings, one again being for our annual budget adjustments from this past year, and the other being for the CDBG annual action plan public hearing day established for June 6th, as you heard in the presentation this evening. We've got second reading ordinances on the changes to the form-based code with parking, as well as goals and intent, and also second reading on the C85 edition, which is the replat of the, we'll say, Four Boys restaurant that the Searcy family is redeveloping. The biggies under resolutions, currently on consent resolutions, we are looking at an extension with Rocky Mountain Power to allow for franchise agreement negotiations to continue. That is a request of Rocky Mountain Power. Wallace Turnbath has been working closely with Rocky Mountain Power, and again, this is I don't want to say routine, but this is a necessary agreement, and so we are working through the negotiations and getting signatures and such as needed. The next one under consent is an agreement with JTL, which is Knife River, to work on the Robertson Road North Pathway project. So again, this is part of a TAP grant, Transportation Alternatives Program, federal funding to get the pathway project along Robertson Road to the north, and that will come forward. We also have a consent reso for a contract with Dave Loden for roof replacements, and I know the rec center is one of them. And
fire station,
which one?
One
is the other one. So again, this is all budgeted with roof replacement projects. The third is a resolution, again on consent, to look at what we're calling fees for the use of parks. Our parks manager has, and the team has really looked into waiving damage deposits that in the past we've rarely capped into those or necessary. Many of us have rented park facilities, and then it's a matter of crediting it back to credit cards. And so some of these steps that we have put in place, we're looking at the efficiency components with our goals, and we're going to come forward with some changes on that. We are also looking at rentals of parking lots in connection with some of our major parks. We're looking at rental fees on some of the largest parks. Case in point, Crossroads Adventure Playground, which the Trails group and Rotary rent for the Duck Derby each year. A huge rental facility, a lot of people there. There's maintenance required afterwards, obviously, with trash and debris pickup, even though we do our best. So what Parks has done is to put together, I felt it's a very comprehensive analysis of the use of our parks as well as the fees. And so you're gonna see some reduced and some upped a little bit, because we are not into hardship, and then just a little bit better communication when people want to rent facilities. So I felt that, again, the memo brought forward from the city team is a good one. I think it'll be very informative. The next is an annual, we've got, and then maybe it is annual, when we go out and we analyze the landfills permitting. And we have TerraCon has done this traditionally in the past for us as a requirement of running a landfill. And so that agreement is coming forward to produce, it is annual, the annual reporting and monitoring project. What you heard this evening is the next item, which was presented by Sean, is for the agreement with the Recycling Industrial Repairs team for that cylinder that he demonstrated. So again, the $60,000 for the two, $30,000 each for the two cylinders that we need out for the baler. The next is a lease agreement with the BMX Parents Association. No cost to us, but they would like to enter into a lease agreement with us to use the old miniature golf course out there at Mike Cedar Park to create cool things for the young people to ride their bikes around on. That's my lameness. Things that Liz has never done. So those BMX bike things that I watched jumping around, that's what they want to do out there. And it is, in fact, the Parents Association that would like to put that in. It is our property, so there would be a lease agreement, but again, no cost to the city. We have a county plat to approve since it's within 1 mile of the city. So again, procedural for us. Site plan for Ravencrest. Again, this deals with the development that Lisa Burridge has put out at Poplar and Wyoming Boulevard. And again, looking at the site plan and some turning lanes that she has worked with YDOT in that development. And then the last is to rename a couple of the streets that Steve Grimshaw has put into place with the Fairgrounds Home Edition. Those are the resolutions. And then under minute action, we are looking at a couple purchases. One is for utility vehicles for our Parks Division. And The second, it's another classic, is this huge tandem axle truck chassis, another great memo to learn quite a bit about by our wastewater collection division, and the necessity in really updating that vehicle that gets a lot of use with factoring up debris so that we can have clean wastewater. Well, that sounds like an oxymoron. So we can have, yeah, efficient wastewater collection. So those are the items for our upcoming meeting. You won't want to miss it. It's exactly at 6 o'clock. Be there for more.
B squared.
Yeah, be there for more. Good stuff. And descriptors about BMX.
Could you come with a little more detail on that?
Yeah. I'm thinking, I'd like wear the apparel. Yeah.
Better explanation of what BMX is.
You know, we'll put it up on the screen. We'll just have them racing across there. It'll be a first. Okay, that was fun.
Okay. All right. Should we go around the table really fast?
We'll begin again tonight. Thank you.
Chris? Charlie?
Well, my penance for missing meetings for softball and track is I get to drive to Jackson tomorrow in a snowstorm and spend 2 days in Jackson at the WAM strategic planning meeting.
Thank you.
As your representative.
It sounds horrible.
It's terrible. It's just terrible.
I was raised Catholic, so the concept of penance is sort of ingrained. But there, it will be an interesting meeting where we talk a lot about long-term funding options for municipalities, because as a state, we've got to figure this out. And we're just making decisions year to year with no stability, long-term stability or predictability as we go through budgets, trying to figure out, well, where's the money coming from, how much are we going to get, and it's just very difficult to make long-range plans. And, you know,
Could you be getting a big gavel to take, because we need some attention on the issue?
I have a pink one with bling.
So, not that we're going to solve it, but we need to talk about it and be part of that conversation. So, there will also be a very serious discussion about the whole business of extraterritorial jurisdiction and how we're going to be working with the counties on dealing with the boundaries between the city and the county, and what role does the county have to play? Should the county be playing in developments right on the outskirts? There will also be discussion of how well the field tracking mechanism worked that WAM put in place this year. So if any of you have comments on how that could be improved, this is, you know, let me know by tomorrow. and then we're also going to be talking about the role of the regions, because that's something WAM has really worked hard on is to create these regions, because we're so spread out that there's some communication within the areas of the state, so that we can kind of hopefully have a discussion about common problems in the region and improve communication. So those are some of the things that will be going on. I also want to mention that I will not be able to attend, since I'm going to Jackson, but I was invited to the commencement ceremony for Climb Wyoming, which is tomorrow at the Walcott Gallery at 6:30, if anyone cares to attend. I think it's meaningful for people when city leaders come and say good job, and we're proud of you for getting this done. Kevin's here. I went to DDA, I think, since last time I was here, and one of the important things I think people should be aware of is that there is a separate committee being formed to basically run the David Street station, with the goal of having a manager that will do the day-to-day operations, and that will be a time-consuming job to make sure that facility is utilized. So things are moving forward. If I remember correctly, Kevin, you said we're about $1 million short of our goal as far as the funding, and but we're closing that gap.
I didn't know if I was supposed to or not.
You can. You certainly can.
$500,000 for phase two award, but I'll probably never be done fundraising, because there will always be a table or a chair or something that needs to be bought. So knocking on the door to finish it.
It's just truly amazing that we're as close as we are. I didn't think we would.
be where we are. So it's great to see it all coming forward.
That's it for me.
Jesse.
I have a whole list of things, but just a reminder me, when Kevin was here and his team, they give the TIF presentation, funding and long-term planning. Council then asked staff if we could see how that would impact our general fund and what that would look like, and really just see how accurate it is, compare it. I was just wondering where we are with that.
Your Honor, staff was directed by BH to look into that, and we do know that that has been completed, and we will get that onto a work session. We did step through some of his notes.
Okay.
But you're right, we need to probably get it onto a future work session.
We are planning to incorporate into the budget.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Trace.
Outstanding.
So when we have those budget work sessions, we're going to address it at that time.
Okay,
excellent.
Perfect.
Thank you.
That, and then also the land that's associated with phase two, is that being addressed too? With the DDA?
Yes.
And that whole area?
Yes.
Okay, so we're on schedule.
Yes.
Next, the demerit system, updating the ordinance. I was wondering how we're looking with that. So if they don't pay their taxes, for example, then staff has to reach out to them.
Yeah, that we were going to address that at the work session, I don't know, over a month ago with park licenses, and then that got bumped. And then with the prioritization of the dispensing room and all of that, it's still on our list.
Okay. Just put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And do you happen to know Restaurant Liquor 9, I think was that the one that hadn't paid since April, or it was addressed in April, but
it was a notification of a release, I think 2 weeks ago.
Okay,
it finally did get released, yes.
Outstanding.
One of the comments I heard is that they're punished as it is, because they can't buy alcohol, so does it matter to have the demerits added to it? Just wanted to run that by you.
Yeah, it just seems like staff spends time on it, so it's just something, you know, we're all punished, we pay taxes, you know. But the problem is that we have to reach out to them, seeing if they're even paying their taxes, they spend some alcohol, I don't know if that's being done, but it's something that you might be concerned about, I guess. So the thing is it's, I guess, a slap on the wrist, just saying, hey, look, we have to look into it, we have to address it, we have to follow up with it, and, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Anything else?
Yes.
Okay.
Cell towers. I was wondering about cell towers in certain neighborhoods. There's somebody that was in, what would it be? It's kind of off Poplar Street in my ward. You could basically say from Mike Cedar going towards Langley Boulevard in that area, and then reached out to him. Well, he had mentioned that some of the issues that he has with cell towers in Casper is that rent prices are almost 5 times as high, and the city requires $1,000 annual inspection, where they usually provide that inspection report federally through the FFA, FCC every 3 to 5 years. And they proposed that they wanted to put it by Mike Cedar, for example, when they're doing the new water park, or by Casper College, or by the church over there. But anyways, there's a need for it. I know it's not allowed in residential areas, but we can't put a conditional use permit for that tower. So I was just curious, do you know about that specific area? And do you find that what we have in place is too restrictive?
Your Honor, Craig is very familiar with this one.
Your Honor, that one is all approved and ready to go. The only thing we're waiting on is the final lease terms, which is in the attorney's office, and there's some issues with the insurance requirements that are actually very high in Verizon's corporate offices getting resolved, so that we ensure that they do things safely and properly, well insured. As far as the prices that we charge, that's a market-driven thing. There certainly, you can go to private individuals and get a better deal if they think. Obviously, they come to the city, so I would say that it can't be that bad. and comparing ourselves to other towns. It's apples and oranges a little bit, Councilman, as far as how much traffic there is and locations and things like that. But I'd say that we're still under market at $3,000 a month.
Okay. Thanks.
And if I may, Madam Mayor, on the inspection issue, we have one thing a lot of the rest of the United States doesn't have, and that's wind. And it's a real concern for us to have a tower on public property and then have it fall over and potentially injure or kill somebody. And so we do have some things that's kind of unique to Casper in that regard. And I would tell you that we reviewed our franchise fees here about 2 years ago, if I remember correctly, and we were nationally low. And so we started to adjust our fees up, which generates more revenue for the city. And I think, like Craig pointed out, if they can find private property to go to, that's fine. We are under some very strict restrictions through FCC of what we can and can't do. And we try to incorporate all of that into what we do. And Wallace Trimbath has kind of become our resident expert on that. I used to do this, but I've kind of let him take that over. And he keeps up. I send him to the seminars with FCC, and we try to stay current with that as much as we can.
Okay.
So I hope that is informative for you why we're a little different than other places. Casper's also unique in that the microwave, if you will, area that each tower can serve varies because of our topography. And that also limits the availability of property that these different companies can go to. And as an example, our cemetery property is high, and it becomes a location that's favored. And we try to then favor a cold location on a given tower so we don't end up with a series of separate towers all over the city. So hopefully that's some help. But
anyway, yes, outstanding.
Free to talk with Wallace anytime if you'd like to. But it's a complicated area, and I would tell you that it is a moving target. These companies are constantly petitioning the FCC to, if you will, chill out the city's regulation of cell tower use. And then when that starts to happen, we lose our ability to regulate it for safety and health.
Okay.
We watch it pretty close.
Give me plenty of ammo to fire right back at them, so I appreciate that.
No, well, just wanted to let you know what we try to do.
The public meeting, how did that go for closing off the street light with Park School? Did that go on?
It was lightly attended, I'll put it that way. I think I met with five or six parents. I did follow up a letter that I think they distribute to all the parents at the school. I have yet to receive a phone call.
Okay.
So I'm very little feedback so far.
Okay.
Mira, would you want to talk about the flash?
Yeah. Beginning the month of May, when the message boards up, advising them that this signal will be going into flash. And then May 15th, we'll actually put it in flash just to see how traffic operates while school's still in session.
Okay.
And then if we still get positive feedback, we'll take it out of service over the summer months while school's out.
Okay. Perfect. That's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions?
I just have one thing. I'm going to give this handout here. It's just a recap of the mayor commissioner meeting that Kenina and I go to. I was doing presentations at CCA all day, handing out documents to kids. So, anyway, so Kenny wasn't able to make it, and
I handed mine out.
Oh, okay. There you go. Sorry, that's too difficult. And we just had it was a pretty informal meeting, and this is about the consensus funds. It's coming up, and it was a conversation of what we were going to do with that. And as you all know, it's a very contentious subject, but I would say that the conversation that we had was good. I would say that the conversation is understanding of where we're at as a municipality, you know, total, and not only just Casper, but other places as well. And so this is kind of a rundown of what each person said that they could use. This is not obviously a total of what they said, but this is what they were thinking they would need specifically at the time. And then we're going to go back and have a conversation with their councils, commissions, to talk about where they were at and how they would move forward before we went back to another meeting in a month to talk about that. I know it's a bit of a touchy issue having the conversation, but I wanted to bring it back to you and have a conversation, see where everybody's at. We can talk a little bit more at length. Obviously, we want to do it right before our executive session, get into a deep conversation about it, but I didn't know what thoughts were, conversations, and so forth. So,
the biggest issue is basically that the little cities can't do anything with their share of money when we follow the allocation of population, so we always end up giving them some of ours so that they can accomplish something. Really what it comes down to.
And Gar, I'm all for doing that. I think we've been good partners and I treasure the relationships we've created. I think John played a very significant role in helping pull that group together while he was here. At the same time, we deserve to take our turn. And so this 2.1 was for the conference center. And I'm not saying it should all come to us, but I do think that there's a balance between being good partners and helping them with their projects, but also making sure that the citizens of Casper are also well treated through this process. And I don't know how we parcel that out, but in essence, when this money was allocated to the conference center, that was sort of our turn, as I saw it.
I think it's going to be a conversation that's going, giving that the conversation with everyone, knowing that there's plenty of things, obviously, at the other municipalities that they need, as far as that goes. And I know maybe what your take was, Liz, I summed it up as best I could. But I understand where you're coming from.
And I don't know how we track that over time as to how much money went to Barnum versus Evansville versus Mills versus the county versus Casper, and how that, you know, would work out on a per capita basis. I don't think we ever want to get that technical, but I do think we have an obligation to represent our constituencies.
And this is just a preliminary conversation that everybody we had. And so I wanted to bring it back and let you know that this conversation, pretty relaxed conversation about stuff. This is kind
good.
Of.
I don't mean to. I'm not.
What's the next step?
What is the next step, Liz?
Getting together, Your Honor, and the next meeting. I think the commissioners expect more proposals to be sent back with some estimates on some of the costs, and if we have some other city level projects, we can bring this back to. But we did not have hard numbers on Mills for the school, and then the Alcova Bridge, they were gonna talk with Mike Hagler about to try to get some estimates on that one.
And I think they were gonna go back, Chris, too, to have that conversation with, like I said, their councils.
We'll just fine tune it a little bit.
Yeah, and kind of have those conversations to look and see what they need and so forth. I will say, I think there are certain municipalities, and I won't say who, but I think there are certain ones that certainly.
Fully.
Yeah, I did say that. But I think that there are ones that have higher expectation. So we're going to have to navigate that as best we can to work together on how that looks.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it all breaks down with a total on it. But what I'm seeing is it's going towards, you know, roads, communications, public safety communications. You can only assume if that's the same equipment up there that it's probably getting replaced or serviced.
What equipment?
Up on the tower.
Yeah, I mean, it's constantly staying on top of keeping all that current in place when things shelf life.
Yeah, I agree. It's a balancing act. And I think, quite honestly, what I've called the sister cities in Wyoming before, it really is a balancing act. And I think it's been a good working group. And I would anticipate we would continue that. I don't think there's been anybody that's been really out of line in terms of, I didn't get my share last week, but in fact, we tend to kind of cooperate because it's pretty much a synergistic effect when you get inside Neshoma County, especially in the Casper area.
And it was evident at that meeting, I think, and I think Liz can vouch for it, it was evident that it was that,
yeah,
that no one's was really.
And I know we see that especially in the MPO Policy Committee. I mean, this is representatives from every group that shows up at that meeting, and everybody's working toward the same goal, and it's kind of fun to watch.
So we'll be chatting more about this and that conversation.
Anything else?
That's all I've got.
Okay. We just have a lot of proclamations and stuff coming up, but I won't go through each of them. Can she make me a nice copy, though, that I can keep? And then we need to go into executive session, so...
Your Honor, I forgot something. Just a quick announcement. In case you're not aware, the WAM convention is in Gillette, May 31st through June 2nd. Important for us to have some involvement with that, if people can find the time. And it's... Well, Jesse, you were there. There's valuable training opportunities at these conventions.
I've found very useful. And they're all online.
It's hard to take the time off. We all know that, but...
We'll take just a couple minutes for everybody to get back from the restroom. Yeah, so...
12:45 tomorrow, then.
On the 26th?
I can't.
12, right in? Yeah, Chuck? You still have the bathroom? Do I have
to...
Okay.
I don't really...
Now you know where you're going?
If you guess a name, if you...
That place over there.
No. But the man will take minutes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. With the Arbor Day group.
A call from a kid last night.
Yes, thank you. Has organized this along with our marketing department. And there are going to be little school kids there.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, they're playing the...
So you've got to fix the language.
Exactly what goes